Well, I guess to kind of start off things, I've got to ask, how did you and Michael first get connected? Where is this connection with Chef Michael?
I had never wanted to go to Israel. It was not on any top 10, 20 bucket list. I wanted to go to Paris. And a friend called me up and said, I'm leading a food press trip to Israel. Somebody just canceled. You have to come in 3 weeks. And I wasn't working on a project. I'm always looking for things to do. But Israel, Israel, it's all about conflict. What, food? Doing a food press? It didn't, nothing really connected. But I went, and I was completely knocked out by the food, by the people. And we can go into more about why I think it's so amazing, but to get towards Michael to answer your question, when I came back, I got a couple of reactions. One was people laughed at me, and the other one was people didn't believe me. And I thought, aha, this is a great, maybe I found a great subject for a film, you know, that will surprise and delight. And as I was trying to figure out how to do it and what to style it and what to do, somebody said to me, a mutual friend said, if you want the best Israeli cuisine in America, you need to go to Philadelphia and eat at Sahav, which is Michael Solomonov's restaurant. And for me, going to Israel had been an epiphany. I found these incredible people, this amazing food, and I thought, well, maybe I'll find, I don't use hosts in my films. I feel that a host gets in between the subjects who are really passionate about whatever they're doing, whatever the subject of the film is, and the viewer. And, you know, I wasn't going to have somebody going, and now we're going to go into this restaurant, and it's really great, and the chef does this, and, you know, it's like, put me to sleep just talking about it. So I was looking maybe for a young me to follow around, to have their epiphany, to watch them have their epiphany. And I went without any idea that I was looking for a guide, and had Michael's food and talked to Michael, and within 10 minutes I turned to my wife and I said, this is my guy. And I realized from talking to Mike, who had been born there, grew up in Pittsburgh, goes every year a couple of times, really knows the food, really knows the people, really knows all the traditions, that I needed someone who understands all that and talked to all those people. And, you know, he's so funny, he's so self-deprecating, he's so lovable that he really surpassed my expectations. Because, you know, you hear about screen tests and you hear about, even in documentaries, you know, they want to see samples. And, you know, if I'd been working for a network, they would have said, well, let's see Michael Solomonov in action. And that's kind of fake, to put somebody in a fake situation. And I don't know that kind of thing would have really worked. And so I, in a sense, I took a flyer on him. You know, he doesn't need me to get famous. He's already an incredible chef, even back then in 2013 when we finally shot. But he just did, I think, such an amazing job, and audiences are really responding. It's a very long answer to an easy question.
Well, I've got to ask, when you guys decide you're going over there together, and, you know, who is kind of picking the journey? How did you guys get the journey through Israel? Like, did it start with Michael's idea of, well, we got to start in Tel Aviv and go from there? Or was there some type of, you know, look back on your trip and you wanted to touch upon some places? I mean, how did you guys choose the itinerary?
Yeah, that was my doing. We spent a very long time researching. We made lots of contacts that started with that first trip, which was in 2010, and met some wonderful people who offered to help. And, you know, just like any journalist does a story looking for the right subjects, we did our homework and we networked and we talked to people who put us in touch with other people. And then we would talk to Mike and say, what's your list like? Where do you think we should go? And in the end, we filmed at over 100 locations. And Mike had just been to Israel 3 weeks before. And as I said, he goes all the time. And he had not been to half of the places that we took him to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And here's a country the size of New Jersey, you know, and there was so much new, even to him.
Well, kind of jumping off that point, the second place you guys go is Rama's Kitchen. And yes. I've got to ask, because I asked my dad, I was watching the documentary, and I yelled at my dad, I go, where the hell is this town? I've never even heard of this place. How did you find Rama's Kitchen?
The same way, research. I have no idea how that came up, but somebody said, oh, Rama's Kitchen, and we looked it up, and, you know, in the age of the internet, you can see photographs, and you can see all kinds of, you know, quick and easy things. I have no idea how we actually made films 30 years ago where, you know, there was no internet, and, you know, and phone calls and things like that, but it was just through meeting people and talking to people, and she was so amazing, that whole idea that we're so local that we weren't even going to have fish because it's 45 minutes away and there are no fish in the mountains. And you know, it was a surprise to me every day, and I was so naive, and I think that's one of the reasons the film is resonating, not just around the country, but around the world. We're in well over 100 film festivals and special screenings around the world. And I think the reason is that we only get the bad news, and we really know nothing about the people. We only hear about the conflict. And it's a marvelous culture, all those cultures, marvelous people that are there. I do have to say that very, very sadly, Rama's Kitchen was firebombed in December.
Oh, no.
And half the people in her restaurant are Arabs. The town is a little Arab village about 20 minutes from Jerusalem, about 30 minutes from Tel Aviv. And, you know, they're crazy people everywhere. And so she does plan to rebuild, but this stuff really happens. It's at the same time, people ask me, "Well, is it safe there?" And I say, "Are you kidding me? It's safer than New York City. It's much safer than Chicago. It's much safer. It's probably even safer than Dallas. I'm sure. You don't feel like you're." You know, with there are cops everywhere. You don't feel like you have to be looking over your shoulder when you're traveling in Israel. Anywhere, it feels very, very, very safe. But bad stuff happens everywhere. You know, they don't leave their nightly news off with the murders in town, as every city in America does.
You know, that's kind of one of the beautiful elements that you guys touch upon in that I think there's even the line in there that one of the chefs brings up, you know, food for peace, you know, like yeah. You can bridge the gaps, and there's so many different different ethnic groups that are composed in these different restaurants you guys visit. Can you talk about the impact of being able to see a country through its food rather than necessarily its conflict or its people?
Even in food, as you witness, the conflict is always there. You can't avoid it. And yet, every chef says to me, "You cannot be my enemy when you're sitting at my table."
Mm.
And that was a Palestinian chef, Hussam Abbas, who said food for peace. And that also troubled me, because I knew that my film is not going to create peace. I'm not that naive. Yes, I do want to help the world in any way I can, and I've done environmental films, and I've done social issue films, and that's why I got into filmmaking, because I'd like to help change the world in a little tiny bit, whatever I can do. And so I'm not so naive as to think that I'm going to create peace through food, but I had to get it in the film somehow. And I just had to keep it very subtle and let it be there somewhat. And for the most part, just let the people be themselves and not necessarily talk about peace in every scene, but have you see that these are real people that are just trying to survive, trying to raise their families, trying to be happy, trying to do the best they can. And hopefully you'll see that, yeah, maybe there is a little bit of possibility for that. At the same time, you've got the guy, Asaf Granit, saying, no, I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime, you know, and people are pretty depressed about it over there.
I've got to ask, I was amazed at how...
Let me jump in and tell you one story.
Oh, please, go ahead, Roger.
It's really great, that really pertains to this. We had, you know, I work in a very small crew. We were the principal photography was 4 weeks. We traveled all over Israel for 3 weeks on a bus. We got very close. We're still talking to each other afterwards, so that says something. And... we were going to shoot in East Jerusalem, and one of the members of the crew didn't want us to go. He said it's going to be too dangerous. The last time he had been to East Jerusalem, he was in the army. And I guess there are some tough areas of East Jerusalem, and we were not in one of those. We were in a very nice neighborhood. And I said, I'm sorry, you've got to come, we need you, it's a small crew, and I insisted. And it was the scene of the makhluba, the chef with his mother cooking the big rice pot that he turns over.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And everybody goes, oh, you know, like that. And as happened literally every time we had a meal, either in a restaurant or in a private home, once we had enough filming done, we all then sat down and we had a lovely meal. The crew sat down with the family. Well, the next day, this guy in the crew thanked me. And I never asked him, but I think he'd really never sat at table with a Muslim, with an Arab. A year and a half later, when I returned to Israel for the last time to film, to get what we call pickups, shots and scenes that we need that are missing from the final film that, you know, we're at the very end of editing, we went out to dinner, and he actually said, you've changed my life.
Mm.
That, to me, meant I was on the right track, and I just think that was, you know, a very touching moment and what I, you know, what I strive for in my filmmaking.
To kind of jump on touching moments, I was amazed that Michael opened up about his family and specifically his brother Dave. Can you talk about putting that into the film and the process of that?
Yeah, that's a great question, and because you're a film site, I think your readers will appreciate this. After getting to know Mike, after learning about his brother, after learning that it was the 10th anniversary of David's death, I realized that this was an important element to be in the film. And just like Food for Peace, I was really reticent to either put it in the film. Let me say that better. I knew I had to have it in the film, but I didn't want to take advantage. I didn't want to be sappy. I didn't want to overuse it. I didn't want people to go, oh, you just used Mike because, you know, I just didn't want to over-dramatize it, make it a soap opera. And I decided that we would do that scene with his mother and his father, and it turned out, just by coincidence, I didn't know until just a month or so before we were filming, that his wife and son, Dave, named after his brother, were going to be coming over. And I said, look, I need to do a scene up at the place where David was killed. I have no agenda for the scene. We're not going to set you up to do anything. We're just going to be cinema verite, and whatever happens, happens. I did do an interview before the rest of the family came. I did do an interview with Mike before the rest of the family came. But otherwise, it was just them walking around and being there. And I had that scene at the very end of the film. And as I always do, and I think every good filmmaker does, we test it. We bring in people who we respect at different stages of the editing. And I invite people who are going to kick my butt, who I know are going to give me truthful answers, who are not going to just say, oh, you're great, you know, because you get so identified with the subject matter that you can no longer step back from it and understand what people like or don't like or what they see and they don't see. And that was one of the first things people said. They got to that and they said, oh my God, this is the key element of the film. You've got to put that in the front of the film. You've got to tell people why Mike is important to the film. You've got to inform people why he is doing Israeli cuisine in Philadelphia. It's his story that you're telling, and you've got to let people know. And I thought, oh, wow, but I don't want it to be that whole scene. That, you know, would have killed the film. And so, through very hard work and a fantastic editor named Pam Arnold, we put just enough in so that you as a viewer would understand all of those questions. Why is Mike so involved in Israel? Why he sees himself as an ambassador to Israel? Why he's making Israeli cuisine? You know, he was trained as a classic French and Italian chef. He can cook anything he wants. And it was only after David's death, as you saw in the film, that it started to creep in. So that was really important feedback. And it was very difficult for us to put just enough in that people got a sense of the film. The other thing that was very much like that is the Palestinian scene where people get to tell us that they're very unhappy with the way they've been treated was also at the end of the film. And people said, no. You've got to put that up front. You've got to, you know, that's, again, it's really important and it can't be an afterthought. And so that scene where Osama Bas says we've been really badly treated, which I thought was crucially important to have in the film, we moved up to, it's 30 minutes in. And I think it changes the tone and changes the flavor of the film.
Well, then, I've got to ask and jump. I was going to ask this later on, but I've got to jump to the fact that you guys end the film, I think, with really the interesting element of stuff that you wouldn't think of when you think of food cuisine, but like the wineries and how big it is to the financial side of Israel, and how, you know, food has become maybe even a resurrection of industry in the country for all parties. Can you talk about being able to see that part of it in the change of how important is it that cuisine is so huge in Israel? It is impacting the country, both sides, Israeli, Palestinian, everyone.
Yeah, and I think it's also really important because we're in a moment now where food tourism has become a $1 trillion industry, and people are discovering Israel and discovering food. We are actually doing food tours. The first question, among the first questions at every screening I attend is, oh my God, that was incredible. I want to go to those places. Are you doing tours? And I kept saying, no, I'm a filmmaker. I'm not a tour guy. I don't want to do tours. But the question kept being asked. And finally I realized, well, wait a minute, we have our own tour guide. Abihai Sabari, who you met twice in the film, he is in the ancient wine press scene, and he's in the Shabbat dinner. That's his family, that's his mom that Mike cooks couscous with. He was a consultant. He helped us when we were setting up our shoots. He has a company called Via Sabra that I think he has 12 certified guides. He's a sommelier. He comes from the food world. He owned a restaurant. He knows every chef in Israel. And I went, oh my God. And I called him up. I said, hey, Abihai, let's do the official In Search of Israeli Cuisine food tour. And we've just finished our fifth tour in a year. And people get to go behind the scenes. It's a really insider thing. They get to meet the chefs and eat the food. And so we are now doing food tours. We just did our own tour. We've done tours May, October, and January, our own tours. And groups are now asking us, like the Santa Fe Film Festival asked us to do a food tour with their group. A group in San Francisco, because of watching the film, put a group together, and we did a tour for them. I think next week, Temple in Manhattan is doing one. So we're doing food tours. So, yeah, it's crucially important. And I really, close to back to your question, I didn't want this to be a restaurant film. I didn't want this to be just here's the best food and here's what chefs are making and things like that. I really wanted it to be, you know, people said in the film there's 150 cultures in Israel. Well, of course, it depends on who you ask. And what does that mean? There's not 150 nationalities, but if you eat the Jewish food from Tripoli, Libya, that food is going to be different from five other cities around Libya, which is an enormous country. So that's how you get traditions and cultures. And that's, I think, the main reason Israel is the hottest food scene in the world, because you have 100, 150 different cultures, and they're making incredible food, and they're making food of their grandmothers. And so that's incredibly important. Wine is a very new industry, just like all fine dining. Wine is a very new industry. So is cheese. They were exporting wine to Europe, to Rome, 2,000 years ago. And one of the challenges Israel has is that they're not a wine-drinking nation. It's very new. 350 boutique wineries getting incredible reviews and winning awards. But it's almost, the challenge is they're making too much wine. And the challenge in the United States is that most Israeli wine is kosher, and they're only put in the kosher section of the supermarket, I mean, of the wine store. So people are not looking at Israeli wine because kosher has such a terrible reputation, kosher anything. Just in the last 2 years, I've started to see Israeli wines move to other sections of the wine store, the Cabernet section, the Pinot Noir section, the Pinot Grigio section. So, you know, they've got hurdles to overcome there. It's a challenge. It's such a small country. But the wine's incredible, and the cheese is like you would find in, you know, a small town in France or Italy that never leaves that region. It's and that's, you know, people don't believe me when I tell them that. Well, go see the film and you'll believe me.
I've got to kind of ask a kind of a final question about how much did this film impact you as a filmmaker? I mean, you've just told me that you've now become a tour guide because of it. You know.
Well, I'm not the tour guide, but we're running tours, yes.
But, I mean, how impactful was this experience for you?
It was amazingly impactful. I think, you know, I've been making films for decades, and I like to think that no two films are alike. I let the film subject tell me how it wants to look and what the style of the film is going to be. And I don't know, maybe if you watch five or six of my films, you'd be able to say, oh, I now can see what a Roger Sherman film is. But I hope in the first 3 minutes you're not going to say, oh, this is a Roger Sherman film, if you happen to turn it on when it gets on TV or it's streaming or something like that. So every film is a big, big, big challenge, and this film gave me more challenges. Just like, you know, the Mike Solomonov, I really don't want to use a host, but I needed Mike because he is so crucial to understanding where we are and what we're doing. And so every film is an incredible challenge. I just, you know, I loved making this film, and I can't really put my finger on what it did for me. I can tell you I made more friends in the last 5 years that are Israeli than I have in 10 years in the United States. You know, it was an intense experience. I can't wait to go back as a tourist.
Well, I've got